Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Melissa Worster has supported Independent Tech News directly for 5 years. Be like Melissa. Be Lissa. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, February 22nd, 2019 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
From my home studio in Cleveland, Ohio, I'm Len Peralta.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
I was tempted to say snowy Los Angeles because there technically was snow in the city of Los Angeles yesterday. Yeah. For 10 minutes, maybe.
I did see a photo from your roof that there was no snow.
There was no snow on my roof though.
Yeah. It was mine either.
All up in the
But house. It was very cold this morning, but no snow.
No snow. No snow in Cleveland either though. That's something Cleveland and LA have in common.
Yes, it's beautiful here.
Or at least my area of LA. I guess we don't because part of it, never mind. Hey, today we have a special interview with Eric Olander, who will join us to talk about technology in China. He's the co-host of the weekly China in Africa podcast that explores every facet of the PRC's engagement on the continent. We'll be talking to him in a few minutes. But first, let's start with some tech things you should know.
Baidu beat analysts' expectations for revenue and profit. Revenue from its streaming video service, iQIYI, rose 55%, offsetting lower ad sales on search and also news. Baidu plans to expand its AI offerings like smart speakers and autonomous driving to enterprise and government customers. While revenue rose 10%, it was the slowest growth in 6 quarters. So a rise, but also a fall.
So quick. MacRumors reports Apple plans to close its retail stores in Plano and Frisco, Texas on April 12th. Both stores are located in the Eastern Texas District Court region. That is that region that you might know as being famous for kind of being friendly to patent holders. A new Apple store will open in the nearby Galleria Dallas Shopping Mall April 13th. The mall is just outside of the Eastern District's jurisdiction, but fairly close to Frisco and Plano. So the Frisco and Plano folks can still go to the Apple store, but without Apple operating in the Eastern District. And this could prevent cases from being brought to the Eastern District on the basis of Apple having an established place of business within their region.
Oh, man. Facebook is removing its Onavo VPN app from the Google Play Store. The VPN service will continue to work for existing users, but will eventually be shut down. Facebook used data from the app's users to conduct market research, but it has stopped that practice. Also, the company has also stopped recruiting new users of the Facebook Research app for Android. Now, if you're wondering, what about the iOS versions of all of this? The iOS versions of both apps were banned by Apple.
So that's Facebook stopping its own data collection, Sarah. Right. Let's talk about them dealing with other people sending them data.
Oh, let's. The Wall Street Journal reports that it found 11 health-related iOS apps that share info with Facebook, even if the user of the app has no Facebook account. Now, this is important. It's not necessarily Facebook's fault here. The apps track things like ovulation, or your weight, or your heart rate, and then they share that data. None of the apps appeared to have an option to stop the data sharing, even if you would have known about it and you would have wanted it. The apps use a Facebook analytics tool called App Events that can target ads by event. The Facebook App Events tool advises developers not to share health, financial, health or financial information or other categories of sensitive information. So the company told the Wall Street Journal that some of the practices discovered seem to violate terms, and it will force those apps to stop sharing the data.
So I've already seen people taking Facebook to task for this, because that's the reaction, right?
Yeah, Facebook's at it again. They're stealing our data.
And I would argue this is exactly what happened with Cambridge Analytica, where someone violated the terms of service without Facebook's mm-hmm. knowledge. What was different about that is the question of, wait, when did Facebook know they were violating it and what did they do about it? That's what's got people legitimately angry. This, right. It sounds like Facebook, I mean, we could maybe try to find out if they knew about this earlier, but it sounds like now that it's public, they immediately clamped down on it. They've learned their lesson there. These apps, on the other hand, should not have been collecting this data and sending it to this analytics app without disclosing that. It's anonymized for the most part. But you should know. You should be allowed to decide not to use this app because of that. And you should probably be able to opt in, not opt out of that.
Absolutely. And I also think that Facebook has a user trust issue to the point where even if the company says, don't worry, we're not collecting your, you know, your monthly cycle information or your social security information or whatever. I think that there are a lot of users who are like, we just don't believe that.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you're not doing anything with it, but you're probably not throwing it out.
No, Facebook's even saying like, look, we didn't want them to send it. We don't want them to continue to send it. We're going to stop them from sending it. And people are like, yeah, but you're still Facebook and I'm mad at you. So, yeah.
Exactly.
NVIDIA introduced the GeForce GTX 1660 Ti graphics card based on its Turing architecture, not the Pascal architecture. Unlike NVIDIA's RTX cards, the 1660 Ti doesn't include DLSS or ray tracing support, but then a lot of games don't either. So this may not be a big deal for some of you if you want to save the money. It does promise power efficient performance for 120 frames per second gameplay at 1080p. It's got 6 gigabytes of RAM. Pretty good specs. NVIDIA says it's about 1.5 times faster than the GTX 1060. The GTX 1660 Ti is available worldwide for $279. Roger, I know you keep abreast of this sort of stuff. How does this one strike you? It's a good price.
It's they're trying to hit a market that was sorely missing when all the video cards were being snatched up by cryptocurrency miners. There wasn't a performance but low cost card that they had in the lineup, but AMD did, and so I think they're trying to fill in that gap. And you're right, ray tracing support and DLSS isn't in a majority of games, so there's no benefit for gamers to buy it right now and not really have, you know, like some would say, like, yeah, you're just sitting on $100. That's burning a hole in your pocket because you're not seeing it, the benefit. So this would be a good move if they can fill the channels and make it so that you can buy it without, you know, having to resort to eBay or resellers who are, you know, trying to make a quick buck by buying a huge cash of these and reselling them. It could go a long way to help NVIDIA be more competitive in that kind of value category.
When we were talking to Patrick Norton about the video card market a little while ago, he was hoping to have heard something about this card at the time. So this is the other shoe dropping on that. And it's, you know, it's something when you're building a machine yourself, which I know a few of you do, not as many as they used to. This is a good option to have out there if, like Roger says, you don't have a ray tracing or a DLSS game that you have to play, or you don't have to have just the most future proofed possible video card out there. If you're willing to get by with this, it's a good card.
It's a good card. And even if you're not a gamer, you're a content creator, but you rely on Adobe's Creative Cloud, many of their applications support the GPU rendering that's available within a lot of NVIDIA's and AMD's products. So, you know, it's, again, you know, if they can hit that value proposition and fill those channels so you can actually go to the store and buy one and not feel like, you know, you spent $40 more than you had to, it'd be great.
Yeah, good point.
Let's move on to space, shall we?
Yes.
The Japanese Aerospace Exploration Agency's Hayabusa 2 spacecraft successfully landed on the near-Earth asteroid Ryugu Friday. It will be the second craft to collect samples from an asteroid and return them to Earth after 2005's Hayabusa, the original. The landing and collection were made more challenging as the surface was made of larger than expected gravel. Sounds like a lot of beaches I've been to. Hayabusa 2 will collect two more samples before returning to Earth. NASA's Oresus Rex arrived at asteroid Bennu in December, and that's scheduled to collect samples in 2020.
We're mining asteroids. Mm-hmm. We are literally mining asteroids. It's not, we're not mining a lot. We don't even know what we're getting until we, you know, 4 years later get the sample back.
It.
But yeah, Japan's done it twice now. The United States is about to do it. This is how it starts, right? And the pictures are fascinating. This kind of stuff always fascinates me because it does just look like gravel. Not quite as uniform as you might see, you know, on a gravel driveway or something like that. But it is they are big chunks of rock, and you're like, that's the surface of an asteroid. That's what it looks like.
Well, and I think a lot of folks think of asteroids as like they're rocketing towards Earth to kill us all.
Right.
You can actually land a spacecraft on an asteroid if you do it right. That is kind of mind-boggling.
And I think what's so fascinating is the continued automation of space exploration. You know, back when the Apollo missions, the idea was you send up a man there, you land them, and they're going to dig with a shovel and bring everything back. If you can do these with robots, there's you basically drop the cost, but you also broaden out the number of missions. Really hard to put a person on a moving asteroid and then return them safely back to the Earth. Very easy to do with a robot.
No, it's a good point. The flexibility is important in the mission execution, too. Because they found that this was not like a powdery regolith on the surface, they changed the maneuvers, which could have been impossible with the extra weight of a person, or because they didn't have the time to bring them back alive if they changed the maneuvering. You don't have that problem when you have a machine, or at least you have a little more flexibility. Following up on last week's story about the GAN-created human faces at thispersondoesnotexist.com, we now have thiscatdoesnotexist.com. And if I've learned anything from looking at thiscatdoesnotexist.com, AI is way better at human faces than it is at making cats.
Oh, man, do you speak the truth? You know, it's funny. This person does not exist.com. It really got a lot of attention. People being like, wow. I mean, OK, as we talked about it on a previous show, sometimes there's a hairline thing or sort of a symmetry thing where you're like, doesn't quite seem right. But was for the most part really hard to discern between real and fake. Not the same with felines.
No, not at all.
Every single one of these cats, I was like, that's a weird cat. Like, that would be like a cat at the shelter. You're like, something's up with that cat. That's not a real cat.
Almost flip-flopped. I actually went to thispersondoesnotexist.com several times to try to find ones that didn't look right. And eventually I did, after enough refreshing. With thiscatdoesnotexist.com, it's almost the opposite. Like, you have to...
You're looking for the cat that looks
until you
real.
Find one that looks like a real cat.
Yeah, like, you're like, that's a weird paw. Their eye is weird. Like, that's, yeah.
I just found a transporter accident version of a cat. Like, there's a second cat merged with the cat.
Well, which kind of, you know, it ends up being a question of like, okay, are humans just... Are they easily enough to sort of cobble together to the point that we don't know the difference? We're humans. But when it comes to certain animals, and sure, there might be animals that work better than cats, but this is like, no, this doesn't work.
I think it's part of it is a face is a fairly uniform thing, right? It's always fairly oval. It's got two eyes and a nose, right?
Perhaps,
whereas a cat, they're doing the whole body. And that's more complicated. You got more parts there. So maybe that's...
Also, I'm sure it has to learn more about cats than it, you know, than a person.
Why?
Or oh, maybe no, but we're just very asymmetrical. And
I just think they're at the stage where they haven't fed the machine learning enough.
I don't know if that's... I mean, that'd be interesting to find out. I would assume they've got access to plenty of cat pictures. It is the internet. Like, there's no reason that wouldn't have had enough training.
No, in fact, the internet is actually the place to get all the cat photos.
I think that, I think
all I know is these things will haunt me in my dreams.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Me too.
All right, folks. If you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, don't forget dailytechheadlines.com exists just for you. Go get it at dailytechheadlines.com. China It's very often misunderstood in the world of technology. We do our best on this show to bring you some stories to kind of help you see what's going on there in a different light from what you might hear elsewhere. And to help us understand it even better, let's welcome Eric Olander, longtime China watcher who currently works in digital marketing in Shanghai. Eric, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you.
It's great to be back, Tom.
Now, let's jump right into this, because I think the biggest thing when people are thinking about China right now, at least in the United States, is the trade war. Is that really affecting consumer tech buying habits in China? How much of what's changing in China is just other economic impacts?
So there's a short answer and a long answer. We'll stick with the short answer for time. The short answer is no, it's not having a dramatic impact, in part because the way that people perceive the trade war here is, I think, very different than it is in the United States, in part because the media here is so filtered through government control and censorship and whatnot. And the government's really trying to kind of keep passions down. That being said, Huawei, of course, is one of the big casualties of the ongoing U.S.-China trade dispute. And in that sense, Chinese consumers are rallying around Huawei in some ways, because they feel that the attack from the United States is more political than it is actually on security grounds. So in that sense, there is this kind of, you know, emotional connection to Huawei where people feel a loyalty and a passion for the brand. That being said, Huawei makes great phones. The P20 is an amazing phone and amazing devices. And so consumers are also migrating to brands like Huawei, in part because brands like Apple simply aren't catering to the local needs of Chinese consumers. And in this day and age, with a market as big as China's, that's a really, really big risk for a company like Apple. So it has less to do with the trade war and more to do with catering to local consumer needs.
Now, and Samsung's falling into the same thing where, you know, Samsung and Apple are playing the parts of Nokia and BlackBerry from years ago right now, if they're not careful. How much of the perception of American companies plays into these things? What is the perception of the Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Google within China by the consumers there?
There is no perception of Facebook and sure. Google. I mean, Google left China back in 2010. So 10 years in tech in the US is like 30 years. And in China, it's like 50 years. So it's just not relevant. Most people on the street today have no idea what Google is. I mean, they heard of it as a brand the same way that we've heard about the moon, but I've never been to the moon.
Yeah.
Facebook just doesn't exist. So we have two entirely different operating systems of life. That is, and that's something that's hard for us to understand, that we think that the World Wide Web is truly international. Well, it's really not, because the tools that you use in the United States there in Los Angeles to navigate through your daily life don't work at all here. Your MasterCard, your Visa doesn't always even work here. Your payment systems here don't work because they use WeChat and Alipay. The web is done by Baidu, and all of their time is not even on the web. Web traffic here is actually quite low overall, because most of the time people are spending on these super apps like WeChat. Mm. And so it's a totally different operating system of life. And so in that sense, the American brands just aren't relevant. Amazon's here, but when Amazon's up against Alibaba, it's insignificant. It's kind of cute. And that's the way that people look at it. Nobody talks about Amazon in China, even though it's here, but it's just not even competitive with Alibaba.
Well, that's why they want to merge to be with the better import brand, right? Because if they're going to have any business, they might as well ride the coattails of somebody else who does their business better than they do, it seems like.
But at the end of the day, you know, for American tech companies in China, it's a long, sad story, because this is a very, very difficult market to work in, both because the complexity of the market. But then you have these other factors, like the local players like Alibaba. They have a thumb on the scale in the form of the government. The government plays a very, very active role in society here, much more so in the economy than it does in the West and whatnot. And local players oftentimes have an advantage. That being said, Oracle, Microsoft, a lot of these big brands, they're still very, very active here. They make a lot of money here. And the tech space is expanding beyond just pure tech into automotive. Tesla setting up its first factory, its gigafactory here. So the tech space and the definition of tech is growing. And American companies still are very, very active, but just nowhere near on the scale and size that the Chinese are.
Now, let's flip this the other way. I think a lot of people have heard of Tencent, Alibaba, Baidu, maybe even ByteDance, now that TikTok has busted out with the acquisition of Musical.ly. What are misperceptions of these companies from this side? And what are the big ones that we just don't even, we're not even aware of over here?
So I think the biggest misperception, and it's a 20-year-old misperception, is that the Chinese copy. And that everything is just an equivalent. You see in the news, in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, they'll always say, you know, this Chinese site is the equivalent of this, or this one is the Facebook of China or the Twitter of China. And that's really a misnomer, because Weibo, for example, owned by Sina, is not the Twitter of China, just the same way that WeChat is not the Facebook of China. These things may have started early on very, very similar to the way that Steve Jobs copied the icons from, you know, the Xerox PARC, and it looked a little bit like what Windows was doing, but then it morphed out, you know, to unrecognizable from what it started. And that's where we are today, is that these kind of the parallels are not there at all. But what's interesting to me about thinking about Chinese brands is that a lot of consumers in the US probably don't even know they're consuming a Chinese brand. So I'm always surprised when people talk about TikTok and the growth of TikTok, and that it's ByteDance behind it, and musically as well. And so we're starting to see the arrival of Chinese brands, but in very, very subtle ways. DJI, for example. I thought DJI was from Texas for the longest time, but it's from Shenzhen. Mm. And DJI represents a really interesting trend that we're seeing, where it's the marriage of not just the low-cost hardware that China was so famous for a long time ago, but now it's the marriage of the low-cost hardware with artificial intelligence, very sophisticated software that goes into it, that brains are going into it. So those Lime scooters that you've got all over Santa Monica and San Francisco everywhere, those are made out of Shenzhen, and it's the combination of that hardware and the software. And that's where China's going next. And we see those Lime scooters all over the place. We never think that that's a Chinese scooter. Sure, people assume that it was manufactured in China, but the software was also built in China as well. And that's really one of the big next steps in innovation.
Now, given what we've been talking about, I think it's clear that it's not impossible, but it's hard for a U.S. company to come into China and be successful. And likewise, it's no cakewalk for a Chinese company to come into the U.S., especially these days when there's some prevailing headwinds trying to push against at least some of them. But there's the middle ground that I want to focus on: India, Africa, South America. What advantages and disadvantages do you think the Chinese tech companies have in these markets?
So let's take a look at Southeast Asia, for example, because Alibaba is making big moves in Southeast Asia. And also Amazon is moving aggressively into India as well. So this is one of the big battlegrounds that we're going to see. One of the key advantages that Alibaba has is that it brings together, obviously, this massive e-commerce platform and all the artificial intelligence, all the big data that goes with that. It brings together logistics as well. And it's got payments wrapped up into it. So through Ant Financial, which is their payments arm, and obviously Alipay and all of that technology and the relationships that Alibaba has with its banks and so forth that process all this in the back end, it brings a full suite of applications into a market like Vietnam or Malaysia or even India. Amazon, for its part, is coming in with an e-commerce platform. It doesn't bring the payment side. It's not necessarily bringing in the logistics side in places like India. And so that makes it much, much more difficult. The second part of it is in the hardware space. So Chinese hardware manufacturers, the Oppos, Vivos, Huawei, Xiaomi, Lenovos, they have managed to build phones and devices that are specifically made for this market. And really, there's no American equivalent. Apple is not engaging in these lower end markets. They don't want to be in that bottom feeder space. But these Chinese brands, which now are 7 of the top 10 global mobile phone makers by volume, they're really competitive in building phones that are sub $100. And that's bringing the next billion consumers online. So the marriage between a Chinese phone that the Vietnamese consumer is getting on for the first time, mixed then with Lazada, which is backed by Alibaba, and that e-commerce really shows the strength of the Chinese value proposition in places like Southeast Asia. That's replicating in South America, Africa, and a lot of emerging markets.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if you know, a few years down the road, we start to see Reliance Jio or Indian companies or companies coming out of Kenya or Nigeria start to upset the apple cart of the dominant Huawei, who's gotten complacent. It'll be very interesting to watch.
It will be, but scale is really important here. Remember, Huawei sold $100 billion of gear last year. It will be very, very difficult to get to that scale. But at the same time, local providers are going to be able to customize services in ways that the big ones can't.
Yeah. One last thing I want to get you to address before we go. You do the China Africa project, and I wonder if you have anything that people should know about the sub-Saharan African tech scene that you don't think they would have heard of. We've talked about M-Pesa. We talked about the drone delivery in Rwanda. Is there anything else going on there that you're like, people should realize that this is coming. This is the next thing.
Yeah. It really, Africa is one of the most exciting tech markets in the world. It's a continent that is the youngest continent. Median age is 18 years old. The growth of social networking is just huge. Bandwidth is coming in. Huawei Marine is bringing in a new Asia to Africa, a massive trunk line onto the continent. So we're seeing a connectivity boom as well. But on the Chinese side, it's really, really interesting because a third of the entire cell phone market in Africa is controlled by one company. And it's a company you have probably never heard of, Transsion, which makes the Techno brand. Hmm. And this is a company out of Shenzhen that doesn't even sell here domestically in China. It's selling purely into Africa and Asia, into developing emerging markets. So that's really interesting that one company controls a third of the entire market. Now what Transsion's doing is they're starting to put on a layer of services on top of their hardware. So we're starting to see the arrival of Chinese music services, e-commerce services, and the arrival of Alibaba and Tencent is starting to come on the back of this Chinese hardware that is really now pervasive across the continent. So I think that marriage of the hardware and the e-commerce is going to be what we see in the future.
So how do you spell Transsion?
Transsion is Transsion, and the brand that they have, the phone brand, is Techno, Tecno. So we do a lot of coverage on tech on the China Africa Project. So if you go to ChinaAfricaProject.com and just search for those words, you'll find a bunch of the shows that we've done, and we're going to be doing a lot more of that in the future.
Eric, thank you so much for sharing your insight with us today. Really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
And you just mentioned it, but remind people again, where should they go to keep up with what you're doing?
So we produce a weekly podcast on China, all things China Africa, including tech. And you can find that over on our website at ChinaAfricaProject.com or where you subscribe to all your podcasts. And you can also find me on Twitter at EOLander. That's EOLANDER. And I'm tweeting all day about China Africa issues. And so we'd love for your audience to join our discussion.
Thanks again, Eric.
Thank you.
Eric, wonderful, wonderful insight into the Chinese marketplace. And also, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. Sometimes there are China stories there, sometimes not, but you can submit stories.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
And vote on others at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Also on Facebook, if you like Facebook groups, we've got one, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow.
Let's dive into the email.
Shall we? Kumei had some thoughts on our conversation yesterday, Thursday, on Google Glass and whether or not it should be called a failure. And I think that there are a lot of differing opinions on what that means. Comey says, sure, many cutting edge products, don't succeed financially, but I'm rather interested in using cool products rather than investing in the company stock. So I appreciate it when a company is gutsy enough to release a brand new product to the market and let us all experience it. Most of us don't have resources to even create a prototype. We rely on big companies to make tremendous efforts to develop and mass produce a product. So I think we should be a little bit more fair when talking about the significance of those products. Many products were a failure of the marketing. For example, they should have labeled Google Glass as a developer kit like Magic Leap did, for example. But it was still a remarkable product of hardware, and we all learned a little bit more about the potential of AR. I think there are enough people who worry about the product's financial success or failure. As a technology lover, I think we can rather focus on the innovation aspects and encourage companies to come up with more products in new categories.
Well, very well said, Comey. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very nice. All right. Shall we check in with Len Peralta?
Let's check in with Len Peralta. Len, I know you've been drawing up a storm. What you got for us?
Yeah, it was a fascinating discussion about China by our guest. But of course, I had to go back to the cat story. This cat does not exist. Sort of a companion piece from last week, which was this person does not exist. So in this drawing, we have a cat who is being shown off by another cat.
Cool
cat. That cat is saying, this cat does not exist, cat. And neither does this cat.
Yeah. The cat on the stool is a transporter accident of a cat with three heads. Yes. The cool cat pointing him out is just a cool guy. Yeah. You know, he's a cool cat.
He's a cool cat. And yeah. He doesn't exist either. None of these cats exist. Cat.
Now this is going to make me want to like force a this dog does not exist into the conversation right. Next week so we can get a triptych from you.
That's next, right? Yeah. Next week. Come on, internet. Let's go. This dog does not exist. But this print you can get right now at LenPeraltStore.com along with all the last 4 or 5 years of DTNS drawings. They're all there. You can pick them up today at LenPeraltStore.com.
Our goal each month is to get one more patron than last month. We need 6 of you, just 6 of you. If you are a person who makes up one of a potential 6 people who likes the show and isn't backing it yet, become a member. Patreon.com/DTNS. You'll get a commercial-free RSS feed that you can put in your podcast reader. You'll get special columns from Roger, updates from Sarah about her product tests, and today, an editor's desk from me about my theory about asymmetry and how if we wrap our heads around the asymmetry of interactions online, it might help us figure out how to have better social networks. It's all available on patreon.com/DTNS.
If you have feedback for us, well, guess what? We'd love to hear it. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. And you can find out more and tell a friend. Maybe those 5 other friends want to become a patron. Get it? At dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back on Monday with Charlotte Henry as our guest. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.